This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. It's me, Jeremy Cobb. And today, I am joined by...
Luyando Onati Lewis-Nyao, but everybody calls me Onati.
Yay. Yeah. And because we have not figured out a way to do this smoothly, I will jump back in and say, though my name is Jeremy Cobb, Donovan Pankey and Marcus call me Jermango Cobbler.
I like that.
Yeah, Jermango actually, Cobbler. I really like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Mango Cobbler.
Oh, okay, cool.
Well, we're not talking about food again.
Oh my God!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof.
Let's make them even more black.
Cake glitches and bitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
We thought we would follow up our food talk with a much more vague and ambiguous topic, but that still relates to real life stories and experiences, which is family in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Yes. How family works mechanically, how it works in terms of story and backstory. Yeah, which, by the way, for the record, folks, I don't know if we've ever said it on here. Most, if not all, of Unati's characters are in some way named after a family member.
Yeah. It's usually because most of the time that, like, when I'm looking for a name in the moment, because I, like, really have a love for those names, they just come to my head, like, really quickly. I'm like, there are so many other, like, Nguni names.
There are only three.
Norma, Nomsa... and Norma. Yeah.
it's like if you ever read the Wikipedia page for the War of the Roses, it's the most confusing page I've ever read on that site because everybody's name is either Richard, Edward, or Henry. And then the rest of the time they refer to them by their title names. So it'll be like Gloucester. Or think something like that, but then there's like three or four different Earls of Gloucester. That happened during that war. So you don't know which Henry we're talking about, which Richard we're talking about, or which person from wherever we're talking about. It's so confusing to try and follow, and especially because sometimes people will change titles. So there's like one or more instances where somebody who had gone under by the like a title name gets like a new position or like even becomes king and. And they're like, they're a new Richard. And it's just like, oh my God, who are these people? I know that one of the most common backstory tropes, possibly the most common backstory trope, is the orphaned character. Mm. I think everybody has probably played an orphaned character at some point.
Yeah.
It's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I have, but I probably have.
Yeah, I mean, like, you probably got, like, an orphan fighter or at least an orphan rogue or the orphan warlock.
Always an orphan rogue.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's always an orphan rogue or warlock.
Always an orphan rogue, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact,
funny you should mention, the first rogue I ever DM'd for didn't know where her parents were.
Yep.
She had shout out to a friend of the show, Leo, but she had... she'd had a surrogate dad. So she was a Duergar dwarf who had just been turned up randomly in the snow as a little tiny child.
Oh.
And this guy named Silas, who'd had like this really hard life, this hardened guy, found this little dwarf girl shivering in the snow, thought she was gray because of how cold she was, but no, she's actually just gray, and like saved her and raised her as his own. And they became like this tough team fighting blood hunters, but then, like, because he used to be a member of this blood hunter organization.
Yeah.
But then it caught up to him and they actually killed him.
Oh, so not only
did she not know who her real parents were, she'd lost her surrogate father.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so she had taken his axe, although I think we may have changed that part of the backstory. I don't remember.
Okay.
Look, folks, in home games, stuff gets changed. It's just what happens.
Yeah.
And she'd had this axe that originally was his axe and was, you know, traveling the land trying to hunt down the blood hunters who had killed him.
Classic, totally tropic. You know, it fits all, it ticks all the boxes.
Gives you a clear direction. Yeah, because I think that, well, for example, in that exact same game, another player, I think there was one player who had both of their parents when we started, like who knew both of their parents, but she was estranged from her family and they wanted to kill her. So that didn't go so well. But in that game, in that same game, there was somebody who had a whole family. I think she had her mom, a guy she realized that was actually her stepdad, but she had not been told he was her stepdad. She was raised thinking he was her actual dad, like her actual birth dad, that is. But she also had like 9 siblings. And it was like this huge family scenario. And originally she was actually looking for her real father. That was what she was doing at the beginning of the game. She eventually found her real father and sort of reunited the family. And there were all of these family scenes with all of her siblings showing up. And, there were like a whole range of ages where you have tiny little kids up to like teenagers. And like even somebody like in their early 20s who's like trying to get out into the workforce and stuff. It was a lot of fun to actually experience.
Yeah, because I think because if you take a little nugget from acting technique, right? Character is relationship. So the more relationships you have, the more in depth your character can become. And I think the more of a bag of tricks your DM has to pull from in terms of like the pool of your family and your background, the more interesting characters and conflict that they can create for you.
Yeah, I think that my suggestion would be this. I don't think there's any problem with having like orphans or in your game. Absolutely. Absolutely. Have an orphan background. I would actually like to see a more positive orphan background at some point where you're like, you were an orphan, but you had been like adopted or something, or you just had a more positive experience instead of just like, oh, I lost my family. My entire village was burned before my eyes and now I'm real sad.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've done that. Like, I was an orphan. My other rogue, I have played many rogues. Also, a
lot of tiefling. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, yeah.
The first tiefling rogue. Yeah. Was it the second
this is
or third?
Tiefling, no, three. Like, this is number 3.
Oh, boy.
I was an orphan who was taken in by their thieves' guild, but like a really lovely, warm thieves' guild. And there was like this matronly mum there who looked after me and raised me. And it was a good time.
See, I like that. It's actually reminiscent of jumping back to Dimension 20, the character Gorgug from Fantasy High Season 1, who does not know who his parents are. He's been adopted he's a half-orc, I believe, and he was adopted by a pair of gnomes. Which is adorable. It's absolutely, and the gnomes are super nice. Like they're a really good pair of parents, really positive and loving and
lovely.
Supportive.
I mean, maybe like over positive, but really lovely. Like it's okay.
Yeah, but nobody's really, perfect. Really and you know, I'll nobody's take overly perfect. Positive than rather than overly negative.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take overly positive and a song about every possible moment of the day, any time of the week, as opposed to, like, trauma. That's not fun.
And throughout the season, there's, like, a running joke of him thinking that different people are his dad. I will not spoil whether or not he finds his dad. But the idea that because I think what I was also thinking during something you were saying earlier, which is that – in Dungeons & Dragons, partly because a lot of it depends on how you play the game, but I think in a lot of games, your family really becomes the adventuring party. Like, they become your found family. So the family that you had before may be, in some cases, irrelevant or even, like, too much. Because what they create, if they are not involved in the adventuring party themselves, they basically can create a pull away from the adventuring party, which for some games is absolutely fine. There's zero problem with that. The game that I run that you're in, Unati, the Mavros game, that's like, that can go, everybody has stuff on the side that they go off and do. But that's also set in like a city and in a more modern setting. So it makes sense that people have like actual lives that they go to after it, doing adventuring stuff during the day.
Yeah,
or even having to fit adventuring stuff around their actual jobs. But if you're doing like your classic D&D game where you're just going on quests, getting loot, saving the kingdom, all that stuff, while family can be great as like a stopover, I don't think it can be something that you continually return to, and it can, depending on how it's used in the campaign, it could be a distraction in some cases from your found family of the party.
Yeah, I agree. I think like narratively, as much as you're like not trying to railroad your players in a home game, especially, it can pose a lot of tricky issues in that people's objectives start to become misaligned, and they start to diverge. And that, I mean, although like that is very reminiscent of real life, that is a pain in the ass for the DM.
Yeah, and sometimes for the party.
That's a lot to prepare, and for the party as well. But I mean, like, you know, what about a band of brothers? Why not four brothers going out to, like, I don't know, slay a dragon or something?
I really like that idea. I like the idea of an all-sibling party.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like,
but the squabbles
like
that
something's happened, and they've got to go and, I don't know, something's happened is very vague. I don't know, a dragon attacked, and they've got to go and find the warlock who raised it. Whatever.
Like. A warlock summoned a dragon. They got to go find this warlock. You know what it is? It's a gigantic baby dragon, and they fought the dragon, realized it was just a giant baby, and are now trying to transport it through the land to find the person who summoned it, like who raised. Like when you said raised, literally, this warlock was raising the dragon, and now you're trying. It's like you went to a supermarket and there was a child causing all kinds of ruckus, and you managed to stop the child from like pulling down the displays. But now you're holding the child's hand, walking through the supermarket, trying to find their parents that is somewhere in the store, hoping that like maybe we could get to them. Maybe they'll get over the intercom at some point. Where is the intercom in this place? In fact, a mall might be a better. We should play a one shot.
This is a one shot, right?
Because then you have like a family. That I really actually do like that idea, because you can have built-in party dynamics at that point.
Yeah, take baby dragon
and find the guy who raised it.
Yeah.
Mechanically, I think one interesting one, it would be long-distance communicators. So sending stones, those exist in the game, but I think as written, it's like a one-use-per-day scenario. Mm. If you had, like, something that could communicate somewhat regularly with your family, basically like a phone. If you could phone home and talk to your family from time to time, I think that would be pretty big.
Yeah.
Wait a second, I'm going to sniff. Edit this out. Or leave it in, but edit it out. Or leave it in. Okay, I sniffed.
Cool.
So, you could have the phone home feature. I also like the idea that you could have like a courier who is constantly flying back and forth between you and your family, passing messages. And it could even be that like it's not like a regular. It's not going to derail things. It's like you talk for like a couple minutes. Yeah. And then move on, and you just update your parents, or like let you know what's been happening. I like
that. That's great. I like that a lot, because now I'm also fascinated about like the internal machinations of the couriers and like how does that world work, and how busy are they on these like little missions, constantly ducking and diving dragons themselves, trying to get information to people.
Yeah, it's in the game Wander Home. They have a mechanic, I think, with where you have like moth herders or moths that I think they use moths to deliver mail in that game.
Okay.
And so you like the idea that you have, or similar to the Harry Potter owls thing, but I like the idea of it, of the courier being able to speak a little bit.
Yeah.
So whether it's like some kind of awakened owl or whatever, or awakened moth creature, basically some, or just a person riding something, constantly flying down, like, here's your mail.
Yeah.
And it could even be, I'm thinking of like the Pokemon anime, or even the Pokemon red and blue games, where all of the Officer Jennies and all of the Nurse Joys look exactly the same. And they're all like cousins and sisters, but you're, and only Brock can tell them apart. So you keep seeing this person that you think is the same person, but no, actually all of the male couriers are part of the same gigantic family and they all look exactly the same and sound exactly the same and seem to have pretty much exactly the same personality. Yeah. And they've all gone into the exact same line of work.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I think that could be fun. But what that does is it gives a presence. It gives the family a presence in the game without – which I think lends entertainment, first of all. You can have some very entertaining family little conversations, maybe some squabbles, maybe just some doting – a doting parent, that kind of stuff. You learn about drama that's happening back home, just like frivolous like
– or like somebody could have key information that helps you solve like the major plot point of the game.
Yeah.
Like a spell that has been passed down through your family or like something like that.
Maybe you have like an Encyclopedia Brown little sibling who like goes and does a bunch of research on what you're doing and gives you hints and clues and stuff. Your family can send you nice little magic items and care packages throughout the game. That just sounds really fun to have.
And wholesome and lovely and like just feels kind of real.
And and also what it does for a DM's perspective, you can not only does that give your players a huge emotional in to the game, but then you can threaten the family. You can threaten to destroy them. And now the players are – now everybody who has been observing these conversations and genuinely likes these people who keep showing up are desperately trying to save them.
Save them. Yeah, like desperately. Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we haven't seen them in person yet. We've only been getting letters and stuff.
But you love them because, like, you really flesh out the characters and you give them strong personalities and, like, you really make them, like they aid or chide or whatever the adventure is. And you really grow fond of them.
Yes. Give your players something nice and then crush it. Have it crumble to dust in their hands. Let them feel what it's like. So
I love how this started like a wholesome conversation and now it's turned into full on matricide and patricide. Well, no, you would have to kill your own parents.
You're not killing your own parents. Well, but maybe you have to.
Mass murder.
Maybe they're the ones who are bad. Yeah. definitely holding the nice.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
characters hostage. Yeah. That's what we're that's what we're in favor of.
Yeah. Hostage. You don't have to eliminate them.
But you I think the threat of danger is more than enough in most cases for people to get invested. But I think that I think something like that could be really effective. I've had this was a fun I actually did have something like that once. So Ryan, shout out to our buddy Ryan, friend of the show Ryan.
Yes, Ryan.
His first character was from this tribe of Minotaurs. And his mom, basically he was the biggest and strongest one there, but he had an intelligence of seven. And so he kept messing everything up, like all of the hunts and all of like the expeditions and stuff. And he was going out and trying to kill just to prove himself. So every time they'd try and pull raids, he'd mess up the raid and more bunch of people would get hurt. He'd be fine because he started with like max strength at level one and like almost max constitution as well. And he's a barbarian. So he's just unstoppable. But eventually, the tribe got so sick of him that they went to his mom, who then basically told him that he had been chosen. She lied to him and told him that this god, this obscure god that some of them used to worship, but most of them don't even care about anymore, had actually chosen him, and that she'd had a vision that he was the one to find the god's legendary sword, which is actually a toothpick that the god had used, because the god's a storm giant, and the god had used this toothpick and then dropped it to Earth, and now it's like they consider this legendary sword. And so he's gone out to try and find the sword. Well, he ends up becoming chief of like his own little tribe of miniature Minotaurs and all this stuff, like 3 foot tall Minotaurs. And he, we call them the Minotaurs. And eventually his tribe finds out about this and decides to try and annex his tribe. Like his original tribe starts trying to annex his new tribe. And they send a guy down there to scout it out. But then Jahl's mom, the character's name is Jahl, Jahl's mom starts showing up in his dreams because she's a druid. Awesome. She's a high-level druid and can cast dream. And so she's appearing to him in his dreams and just having conversations with him. And it becomes like this whole new element to the character because we've seen him out in the world, but we've never seen him with his dear old beloved mom. And I think the first time she showed up, he was dreaming like about one of his earliest memories of her. Like, I think he was like in his old childhood home. And I think it was like she had been singing to him or something, like this really sweet memory. But then it's like he's an adult and his mom is also is like much older now. And she's basically telling him, like, son, come back, and spills the beans. And it's like, no, I was lying to you. That god doesn't even matter. I don't even think that god's real anymore. Like, no one. And he's like, what? But mom, mother, I've seen him. I've spoken to him. And she's like, I don't know who you were talking to, but I don't think that god exists. And so now his whole thing is thrown into question. Because he's a paladin of this god, but nobody else seems to serve him. And he's had no luck, almost no luck converting people to this god's service. The only people that he's managed to get are like the higher ups in his tribe. And that's mainly because they think he's cool. So they're like, sure, yeah, I didn't have a god. I guess we'll go with this. Yeah, it sounds good. But it became like a lot of... It became a lot of internal the family basically was an opportunity for and I think this is going to be the theme of this episode. You have a mixture. It's an opportunity for sweetness and for spiciness. Sweetness and spice. That's what you get. You get the sweetness of like these really wholesome, lovely moments for with characters that people can really just enjoy watching and potentially get attached to. But then you get the spicy. The spicy when they're being threatened or when the family themselves are doing the threatening. Yes. Have you encountered – I've been talking for a long time and I could talk for longer. But this is not called One Black Halfling. This is called
– I'm listening intently.
Do you have a story? I'd love to alternate because I'll jump back in with another story.
No, for sure. I think that like my – from my experience, what happens is sort of in my home game is that there are a lot of clan members as well. So in the like even though you have internal families and because the ancestral relationship is so close because it's sort of based on
– You said ancestral tribe. Relationship or incestual relationship?
Ancestral relationship.
Okay. That was I heard incestual but thought ancestral. No. Surely she means ancestral.
No. I mean ancestral.
Okay. Thank you.
Because your ancestors are so sort of close, I was able to kind of use them with some of my players who were more predominantly Zulu. But then another feature that I was able to do, because you have Mzilikazi's people and then you have Shaka's people, but they're all Zulu, but they're two separate clans. And the moment you start now having massive groups of people who, even though they aren't necessarily directly related, treat each other like family, you can now start having political intrigue as well off that level. And it's family. So even though I had a character in one of my games whose personal sort of allegiances and values aligned with Shaka. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no, with Mzilikazi. But, Shaka was the one making decisions to save the people in the immediate. And he had to align himself with Shaka, who essentially months before was threatening to wipe out Mzilikazi and his people.
Oh, turns into Game of Thrones.
It starts to get... Yeah. It can get really interesting, and you can conceive of family in really macro ways and micro ways.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, honestly, makes the War of the Roses reference now is a lot more relevant, because that was pretty much what was happening there. That was a bunch of family members fighting each other in that war. And it's like that was what World War I was. I can't remember if I've ever said it on the show, but if you look at like the European leaders of World War I, especially like Tsar Nicholas, I think it was King George at the time, and I can't remember who else. There's another one of the leaders. Might have been, I don't think it was the Kaiser, but it might have been. I can't remember. But they basically look like the same dude who slightly changed his mustache grooming and wore a different hat. Yeah. Like they were literally cousins who used to play with each other, and now they're leading they're sending their armies out to fight in one of the bloodiest and worst wars in history up to that point. Yeah. I think it was the bloodiest war in history up to that point.
Yeah.
Just a horrible time. But it's true. Like, that was a family squabble.
And I think that, like, in on the other side of the coin, I guess, now that you've made that point as well, if you're, like, building, like, these sort of big political worlds inside of your games as a DM...
Yeah, like, some of this could even have been based on, like, childhood issues. Like, yeah, conflicts. It's, yeah, you're essentially, like, they're following up on drama from when they were children. Like, you did this to me when I was a kid. You bullied me, and I never got over it, and this is my chance to stick it back to you. And maybe that's not their only motivation, but it's in there.
But it's in there. Like, I mean, like, it's a classic, like, Zuko and Azula, like, you know, battle.
Yeah.
Like
sibling rivalry.
Sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
Like, get, you know, you can throw that stuff in there and make it really spicy, because and now your scenes are better for it. Now it's not just long decrees. Now it's actual things that people can play and have fun with.
Yeah, not just the
and
king.
And manipulate.
Yeah. If you find out about people's histories, like what they were like as kids from some of like their, you find some of their like nannies, maids, tutors. If you find some of those people, even like say there was a noble who's no longer, you know, they're largely retired at this point, a council member, but like who knows what that person was like as
tutor
a child.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can now manipulate, goad, mock, humiliate a freaking leader.
Yeah.
Or wrap them around your finger if you wanted to with the right information. Now it's getting spicy.
Yeah, we sprinkled in that spice.
I mean, it was always getting spicy.
Sprinkled in that spice.
You see,
in
sweetness
there.
And spice.
Yeah. Okay, then I will give another example of family drama, which is, it was based around religion, but really what it's about is, because I think people will attribute a lot of things to religion, somewhat rightly, but those things exist in other belief systems as well. Really what it is certain belief systems belief systems in general often will invite people to become such staunch adherents of them that they equate them with being morally right. In some cases, correctly. In other cases, well, it's questionable. Such a position can lack nuance. But essentially, you can equate your political position, your philosophical position, your religious position so strongly with your identity as a family that if one, or even in some cases, sports fandom. I know in some parts of the U.S., you will have like families who are raised to be fans of one team. And if you stop being a fan of that team, it's not just like, oh, we're fans of different teams. It's actually like deleterious to your family relationship. Yeah. It's damaging. Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah. You're dead to each other.
Yeah. Like, it could really be a problem. And what happens when a PC has broken with that tradition? So in that same game that I was DMing, we had a character, shout out to Lulu. Her character was originally from the Feywild, and her parents were essentially religious extremists who had ingratiated their way into Titania's summer court among the Seelie Fey. And Titania in this version was kind of like, I just like to party and go out and have a good time. And they basically were like, yeah, we'll do a lot of the admin work. We'll handle all the administrative, running the kingdom stuff and making sure that people stay in line stuff. And you go off and keep having Midsummer Night's Dreams, because I'm pretty sure Midsummer Night's Dream was at least somewhat canon in that world. I think it actually was. So they were like running all of these purges, taking out anybody who basically anyone who looked somewhat monstrous or evil. Because you know, the Seelie Fey and Unseelie Fey in D&D lore are always at war. The Seelie Fey are like the pretty fairies, and then the Unseelie are the scary, ugly fairies. And they are constantly at war, especially Titania, the queen of the Summer Court, and the queen of Erin Darkness. I think her sister is usually portrayed as, I can't remember, but they're constantly, well, there you go, siblings again, but they're constantly at war. And they were basically taking over that war and were leading all of these purges, getting rid of anybody who even had the least bit of unseelie influence. So even like some of the weirder, uglier fantasy fairy tale creatures, or maybe, you know, you got some fairy tale trolls and stuff who are living up in the Seelie Fey. They're not politically affiliated with the Unseelie, but they're declared basically Unseelie and are attacked on the basis of their race. So that was their family.
Wow.
They were just hardcore, if you look evil, we kill you. And Lulu's character broke with that. She broke with that and actually had befriended a tiefling. Because there's portals between the Feywild and the Prime Material, and this family of tieflings had been refugees from persecution on the Prime Material, and they showed up, and Lothriel befriended them. That's the name of the character. Lothriel befriended them and befriended with a daughter, their daughter in particular, and they become great friends. And Lothriel was always sneaking away to play with this girl, but her brothers followed her. She had two brothers. One was named Triptolear, and one was named Gaiar. Gaiar is like the class clown, real fun guy. He and Lothriel are bosom buddies. It's great. They're loving each other. But Triptolear, he was kind of an annoying suck up and a little bit of a weasel and a snitch. And she really did not like Triptolear. And Triptolear followed her one day to this meeting, caught her, tried to attack her tiefling friend, and Lothriel fought back and actually killed Triptolear. And not to make matters worse, Gaiar saw this. Because he'd followed Triptolear and was like, oh no, and is now heartbroken seeing his sister having murdered their brother.
Well, snitches get stitches, yo. But
unfortunately, stitches are not going to solve this. And she now is forced to flee because she's like, oh no, I can't stay here. I'm not only caught betraying all of our values by spending time with this person that my family believes to be unclean, but I also murdered a part of my family to protect them. I have fully turned on them. And Gaiar's like, oh, and she's like, ah. Oh. And her friend Callista is like, you gotta get out of here. Just run, run. So she used the same portal that Callista's family used, runs through this waterfall and ends up flees into the Prime Material plane. She doesn't know what became of Callista. Oh. She doesn't know what is happening with her family. But she's been on the Prime Material ever since, trying to make a life for herself there, missing her family. Like, I think she'd cast off her family, but then partway through the game, she basically made a deal with their goddess in order to resurrect one of the other characters, like the goddess that their family serves, which kind of pinged her back on the family's radar. Like they hadn't known where she was, but that bing, like that now the goddess like knows where she is and they're in contact with the goddess and they're like, oh. And so they begin, they like lay a curse on her, and Gaiar at this point is much older. So time runs differently in the Feywild than it does in the Prime Material. It's been much longer there. Gaiar is like a beast, and he's a full-on paladin now who
mad,
with all these powerful magic, with all these powerful magical items. And not only that, not only does he have all of his unresolved trauma, but his parents have been feeding into it as well. So he's like, he's basically vowed to go and kill his sister. So the arc comes to a head, and this gigantic battle against this like crazy legendary bat monster that has like draconic powers and stuff. And they're fighting that guy. And in the middle of that, a portal appears. Gaiar comes popping out and is like, "Sister, I have come to And just sees like this giant bat thing. He's like, "What is going on here?" And they're like, "Help us fight this thing." And so Gaiar basically does most of the heavy lifting to kill the creature and then proceeds to attempt to kidnap his sister. And it becomes like this whole drama of them trying to be like, "Oh no, we gotta save Lothriel now." And he's like grappled Lothriel. He's opened a portal. And at the last moment, the Jahl, who had actually been, I think I've told this part of the story before, his mind had been eaten, his brain had been eaten by an intellect devourer. Yeah. So the intellect devourer was like posing as Jahl and saw how powerful Gaiar was and thought, that's a better option. And managed, Gaiar failed the saving throw, got his brain eaten.
Oh gosh.
And meanwhile, the party, like while he's unconscious on the ground, the party steals a bunch of his stuff, but then he kind of pops back up intellect devourer in his mind and runs through the portal, and the portal closes behind him, and they're like, oh no. So now she saw her brother for the first time in how many years, and she felt that same and this was all the player saying this, but she felt that same connection, that sibling connection. It was like, oh no, this is somebody that I used to love. Like, this is a loved one. I was so close. I lost something here, and now he hates me, and now he might even be dead. Like, he got his brain eaten trying to save me. I can't let that guy be loose in the Feywild. That's not safe. That thing is like, you can't have an intellect devourer running around in the summer court. This is not good. And Gaiar is extremely powerful. And also, we don't know where the Mind Flayers are. What if he's trying to contact the Mind Flayers, and you have a whole Mind Flayer invasion of the Feywild? There was like this, even though she was terrified that her family might, like, she knew that there's a good chance that if her family saw her on site, they would probably try and kill her, or at the very least capture her and then, you know, publicly make an example of her and kill her. Yeah. She had hardly any hope of saving those relationships. She still felt such a strong sense of responsibility that she eventually led the party in an expedition into the Feywild to try and find Gaiar, stop the intellect devourer, and save her family, save at least Gaiar if she could. And there was also like the implication, I think she had a vision actually from the goddess, because the goddess was like, "Look, I'm actually not a fan of the way that they interpret my tenets. Like, they're going way far with this. I do not endorse these decisions they're making, but it's like, because it was Vandria Gilmadrith, and the way I had it was because she's the elven god of conflict and war, she would be present. Like, she's bound to be present no matter what. I think her symbol is even like a weeping eye, that because she doesn't like having to be involved in all this conflict all the time. And this is like a real D&D goddess. So I was thinking that like she basically was forced into lending them her power because they were elves, and she is there for elven conflicts, but she was actively trying to get Lothriel to come and stop them from misusing her power and from misrepresenting her so strongly. But that becomes, in that case, that would be an element of family as the villains, but also as, it's kind of like the Darth Vader thing with Luke Skywalker wanting to defeat his dad, but really wanting to redeem his dad.
Yeah, no, for sure. The thing is that, like, it's one of those things when it just comes to storytelling and narrative, simplify. How do you get people emotionally involved? You give them freaking relationships. And all of a sudden, you just watch objectives unfold. Like, now you're collaborating.
Yeah,
like,
which is the best part of DMing, I think, is watching them do stuff that you never anticipated. And now you're like, ooh, the whole world has changed as a result of what you just did. And they're being surprised by how the world reacts to them, and you're being surprised by how they react to the world. And everybody's just surprising everybody.
Right. Exactly. And also, that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, all the stuff you've planned, like the places you wanted them to go, they all die. No. In your mind, you can still go, okay, cool. If they had gotten there in time and did X, Y, and Z, they would have managed to stop this from happening. But now, because they're not there, they're elsewhere. This is now what's happening here. They're going to come back and a whole bunch of other shit's going to be wrong.
I strongly agree.
So, like, consequences, you know?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't feel like, because I know that might feel to others sort of DMs like, oh, but, like, they've killed my darling. It's like, no, all they've done is they've, like, made you a little fun surprise for yourself when they finally get to it. Like, yeah, sure, go chase your brother down. But when you come back to the main arc, you're going to find that there's a problem.
happened. Or that's what may have happened. We never actually found out.
Yeah.
But the drama with Jahl and his tribe and his mom was happening at the exact same time that the party was leaving that plane for the Feywild. Mm. So Jahl is leaving his newly formed tribe knowing that his old tribe is going to try and annex them and hoping that he can make it back from the Feywild in time to stop this. So he's going to do this because he feels a sense of duty to help his found family and his close friends. But he's like, I need to come back as soon as I can, because the possibility exists that he comes back 100 years later or even 50 years later and finds everything having been transformed.
Completely.
Like the whole kingdom has been upended. And in the middle of that, the character who had been orphaned, I've told the story of how, I've told the story actually, I don't think I've told it with this completeness of the arc, but that character ended up, adopting, becoming this, so the character who was essentially adopted by her surrogate father who then died, she then became the surrogate mother to hundreds of halfling children. They were these ghost-wise halfling children who had been raised to be religious extremists and hate all other halflings for things that had happened in the past. And they were all they all served the god, the beast lord Malar, or Malar, depending how you pronounce it. And they were all lycanthropes. Like there, so you have like all these little lycanthrope children that were going to be exterminated by the monarch that the party set in place, because speaking of family squabbles, she actually, her mom was part of that group and had infiltrated the kingdom to try and bring it down. The mom had two kids, her and a brother. The brother got the lycanthropic powers and therefore was the mom's favorite. The daughter never did. She actually favored her dad. So she was more of the dad's favorite. And the daughter was older, so she was in line for the throne, and the brother ended up framing her for their father's murder to try and get her out of the way so that he could then, like, bring down this halfling kingdom, because he's affiliated with the Ghostwise halflings. And he wants to, like, subsume these halflings under those halflings. And so the party had to go find where the rightful monarch, her name was Lady Mountlove, where Lady Mountlove had gone to. They've tracked Lady Mountlove down, brought her back, defeated her brother, placed her on the throne. But now they have to lead an army against this other neighboring secret nation, essentially, of halflings who've been trying to kill them. And they win the battle, but there's all these prisoners now. And you look, if you are a halfling queen whose claim to the throne is already tenuous because you had just been a fugitive until a couple days ago, accused of murdering your father, the previous king, you showed back up, killed your brother, the king that had replaced mm-hmm. you and are now claiming that you actually are, you have uncovered a nationwide conspiracy of a bunch of halflings, halfling lycanthropes who are trying to bring down the kingdom. That's a tenuous claim. Like, it takes time to prove something like that in the hearts and minds of the people. And you have to demonstrate that you're a good ruler. Mm. And she's looking at this and she's like, not only do I have all of this hanging over my head, but these people, if I let them live, are probably not going to change their views anytime soon.
How do you manage that?
But how do I keep them in prison? They could transform into animals. Yeah. If I put them in cells, some of these people can transform into insects. Like, that's... Like, my mom, she found out her mom could turn into a snake. How, and like a small snake at that. How do you imprison a, like, that doesn't work. Yeah, so it's only a matter of time before some of them escape. And then I have all these children as well. We can't have them around. We have to wipe them out. And so the party's like, well, yeah, but that's like a genocide thing, and I'm not comfortable with this. And so that character was like, look, these are actual children. These are children. I'm going to save these children. I'm going to save as many of them as I can. And so she ended up saving like 300 kids and brought them back to this this druid commune where they were basically in hiding, and she had become their surrogate mom. And it was really, really cute. But they were all growing up as well. And now their new surrogate mom has to go off to another plane of existence to try and clean up a mess that her party had created a long time ago, going off to the Feywild. So you have all of these elements in play. And really what we're saying is, because family members, I think it's fair to say, and I think it's important to say, a found family is every bit as legitimate, and in some cases more legitimate than blood relations, in my opinion. And it's an important point to make.
Yeah.
The saying blood is thicker than water is actually a misrepresentation of the original quote, which is thought to be the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb, meaning the bonds that you choose to form in life are stronger than those that exist purely because you happen to be related to somebody. And people usually interpret it the reverse, to say that blood relation is thicker than, I guess, pouring water to drink with people. I don't really know. I don't know what that's supposed to be. But anyway, the point is, if you introduce characters into your world that the players, you can work and create stuff like this in your backstory for your DM to use. Now, obviously, it's not under your control if the DM uses it or not. Like, you can ask to visit your family and ask to talk to them and so forth. But the point is to give your players important NPC connections so that they can care about not just the world as a whole, but specific people. When you say, like, sure, a person's affiliation may be very, very strongly with their nation in real life that they're from, but it's more likely to be strongly with the people that they love from that nation.
Yeah.
Like, there are a few people that love their nation more than they love their loved ones.
And again, like, I will keep hammering this home. The story will literally write itself. You have now given your... Because once you give your players relationship and people that they care about, you give them objective.
Yeah, 100%. Listen to her wisdom. She speaks truth. That's old school. What would this be? This would be Stanislavski? We've known this for over 100 years now.
Yeah, that's
it. and really, I think it's worth underlining, because we kind of said it, but we didn't fully say it. I think so many campaigns are just about going out, fighting, getting stuff. Having those moments of levity and happiness and warmth where the PCs actually get to enjoy the stuff that they took and work on building stuff of their own and spend time with NPCs that they love, that makes all of those other moments hit harder.
Yeah. So much harder. Because you care.
Yeah.
Because you care. When that village gets burnt down, it's not just a bunch of nameless people.
Exactly.
It's real people.
Exactly.
Wow. That sentence.
You don't want to just burn a village of nameless people.
No.
Anyway. But I did want to, I was thinking about, here's the question. I will lay it out before you, Nati. This is two choices. Yeah. Would you rather discuss the idea of mixing different D&D races in terms of, like, actual people getting married and having kids together family. And what I mean is like not like elves and humans. Yeah. What I mean is like Aarakocra and goblins, where it's like they're so radically different. Would you rather talk about that? Or would you rather make a comparison with what we've been talking about to some experiences that we have had personally, like positive primarily, I would hope, positive experiences with our own families and the roles that they have played in our lives and have added both sweetness and maybe a touch of spice here and there?
Little bit of both, because I feel like those two things are really valid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are both certainly valid topics. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Which one do you want to do first?
Let's do the weird chimeras first. No, I'm joking. chimeras. Yeah, I am hella down for this because, like, you know, in a world where mixed race, if you're going to say that people can interbreed, right? Then they must interbreed indiscriminately.
That's
my
where
answer
I
to the question.
Yeah, and the, and really, and we've talked about it a lot of times on here. The use of the word race in D&D is what creates that expectation.
Yeah.
Because what I just said, race mixing.
Yeah.
That is a loaded phrase.
Yeah, it's really
what I mean is what I meant is an Aarakocra and a goblin. But when people hear it, they hear something very different. I would say that if you are going to have some quote-unquote species that are able to interbreed, like elves and humans, it's a fantasy game. Like, elves are supposed to be nearly, like, they can live for, like, 500 years in D&D or longer.
What's the gestation
and
period on
humans,
that?
Yeah, like, how does that even, how does their anatomy even work? Like, how do we not have way too many elves? Most people will say it's because elves don't breed very often. So elves are... how many chromosomes do elves have? And like, how are they, because it's fantasy, right?
Yeah.
It's all made up in magic.
Yeah.
So if you were saying it's all made up in magic, then honestly, I would say if you want to, you can have anything get together.
Exactly. And like, I think it just like, depending on the tone of your world or whatever you're trying to do, it just adds to it. And like, you know, I think whenever I play with any of my players, or especially when I play with my kids, like, they always love the most weird, bizarre character that you could possibly make up. Right now, we have were-dolphins in one of our games. And there's a were-carp.
Yes.
And now our detective, who is, oh Lord, what is our detective? I think he's like he's a barbarian fearbolg. It was bitten by a were-carp. So now, who knows what that's going to freaking come out looking like?
It's going to start growing scales.
So, like, do what you want to do. And they have a great time doing it because it's a fantasy world and it's loads of fun. And they decided to create these characters. So I think it's fine. Also, it's D&D. Do what you want. And if someone tells you otherwise, I don't know, throw a shoe at them.
Yeah. Should it be your shoe or should it be a shoe that you find?
A shoe that you find. A random shoe.
Yeah, search for a shoe. The nearest shoe that isn't yours that you can find and throw it at them. Should the shoe, is it okay if the shoe is originally on somebody's foot? And if so, how do you go about removing it from their foot before throwing it?
I mean, I feel like if you like explained to someone really nicely, they might be open to lending you their shoe. But maybe just find a loose shoe, a rogue shoe.
I feel like rogue's shoes would be too light.
They would be too light.
I think you want some like a paladin
sturdy,
shoe.
Sturdy, like a solid boot or a clog.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. It can add to, it obviously depends on the tone of your game, but honestly, it adds a really interesting element. We've talked on here before about, what's his name? The doctor that you guys encountered, who was the combination of the Lokatha and the rabbit folk, who immediately became one of the most memorable, one of the most memorable characters from this campaign so far. We wouldn't have
wonderful
had him
wonderful and
that.
Horrifying.
He was truly horrifying.
Yeah, and I think that came about because of your little, I will say, like, species chart that you've created, Jeremy, because you randomize it. And I think, I want to just go back on a word that I used that I think was kind of unfair. They're not chimera, they're not just, like, weird, bizarre, like, creatures. I think in that spirit of potentially randomizing it, it can take some of the ickiness out of it if you're feeling ickiness about
it.
Just completely randomize it.
And it also means that the DM gets surprised. Like, everybody gets surprised.
Surprised. Like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it was very entertaining, yes, to have something like that. And actually, the reason that that happened is because there is a spot on there where it basically just says roll again twice, and you're going to get – you now have to pick two things that this person is. And it, I think we've had as many as three things because somebody rolled it twice in a row, I think. And so they ended up with like – no, they rolled it once and then rolled one other race and then rolled it again. So they were half this, a quarter something else, and a quarter something else. But like I think it is fair. Like it, look, it's fine. It's a silly fantasy game. I get if you don't want it to be on your table, but it does, I feel like it does get kind of weird when we like, cause what's the line between like, cause people will be like, oh, the more monstrous quote unquote races, basically the things that look progress increasingly less human. I don't know. To me, it's just like free game. And shout out to our resident bard, Jonathan Charles. We've mentioned him again on the show or before on the show many, many times. We've had him on the show, but we've mentioned this character, his character Jinx, who is a half dragonborn, half elf. That was like the first, I think, combination like that that I ever encountered. And I thought it was really cool. But the last bit, I think for a little bit of wholesomeness, we could talk a little bit about how our families have figured into our backstories in various sweet and maybe occasionally spicy ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I think all of the women in my family have always inspired me. My gran, when she was younger, got an opportunity to work. She was a seamstress and sewed a lot, and she got an opportunity to work at Coco Chanel in Paris, but didn't take it because my granddad at the time was like, if you go, I won't wait. So I always like do all of the things that I do in my life for her to make sure that like her lineage like is always out there pushing things. So I think family can have an effect on you in that like her.
Like you're trying to live up to, you're trying to live out the opportunities that she never actually had or that she never got to take advantage of.
Yeah, because of not just because of like the patriarchy, but also apartheid. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like all manner of obstacle.
Yes.
Like it's that thing of like, you know, we're the ones our ancestors dreamed of. Do you know what I mean?
Hmm.
That sentiment, like, you know, especially coming from a country and coming from a background where there's been a lot of subjugation in the past, I think there's something quite nice about knowing that any time that you achieve something or any time that, I mean, just going into a mixed race bathroom, do you know what I mean? Like just going to the beach with like everybody is enough. But like, I think that what's quite nice for me, especially with the women in my family, is that I always remember that I am out there trying to fight and achieve to make sure that they're remembered as well, and their contribution is remembered in my genes and my blood.
Mm. So does that make you then want to have kids specifically so that pass? Oh, okay. So you're basically just trying to have achievements so that then people, if they look into your lineage, recognize that you happen to be descended from those people?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But I'm done. it ends here. It ends here.
The commitment really has a hard line. I want people to remember you specifically through me. No one after me. I am not making any more. We're done. Done. There are no leftovers. The soup has been utterly ladled out. There is no, I drank the last little bit.
It ends here. It ends here. But I think, I think that's how my sort of family has kind of affected me.
I've had a very good relationship with my parents, both of my parents, throughout my life, and it has had an absolutely gigantic influence on me in ways that I didn't even realize. It has shaped the way that I approach conflicts, for example, and conflict resolution. It has approached the way that I approach it has shaped the way that I approach relationships. It has shaped even how I speak in some ways. I didn't know this until people kept saying that I spoke very strangely when I was in drama school, but I got a recording. I noticed that my speech patterns are very similar to my dad's speech patterns, and in that it often sounds like I thought of what I was saying before I decided to say it. So I like planned how to, planned where to put all the emphasis, et cetera, et cetera, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that sounded very unnatural to a lot of the people that I was at drama school with. Mm-hmm. And it was, it was just how I spoke. Yeah. But then I realized I got a recording of my dad. I had him record himself telling me a story. Mm-hmm. And so then I played that for people and they were like, oh, that's where it's from. Yeah. But the... even beyond stuff like that, my parents have given me all sorts of very helpful life advice. I spent like the last 9 months with them because like when the second lockdown happened in the UK, they ended up being like 3.5. And when the second one happened, I was like, nah, baba, nah. And I split to the US and was in the US living with my parents for like 9 months.
Yeah.
And the effect on my life, I would say, is darn near immeasurable.
Yeah.
I don't have the same sense of duty to try and cause people to remember them, but I definitely feel a very, very strong emotional connection to them and will openly credit them with a lot of the very positive, like a lot of qualities that people like about me are qualities that were instilled in me by my parents. Mm. So a big shout out to the parents cob out there. Thank you very much. And the family, would Niao, would it be Louis Niao? Would it be Niao?
Yeah, Niao. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, where's the Malisa, Lewis come in?
My ex-husband.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just can't change.
All right, I'm with you now. Really?
Legally can't
like
change.
Like legally or? Oh, dang.
Like I have to like change my name back.
Whoa.
Or get remarried.
Whoa. Well, okay. So, wow.
Yep.
I did not know that. That's really interesting. Speaking of the influence family can have on your lives. So, found family just as legitimate, I guess. Even from a governmental standpoint. They will not let you drop the name. On that note.
A little bit of spice.
I guess that's, well, we said a little bit of spice. We got the sweetness. We got that spice in. So thank you all so much for listening to this episode. This was a lot of fun talking about this, talking about these topics. Hopefully this was a little heartwarming for you. It was entertaining for you. You got to hear some cool stories and you got to some good ideas for your own future games or characters. And I guess there's nothing left to say at this point, but
so long Shire folk.
Hello, halflings. Yeah. We have some patrons to shout out. Thank you so much, patrons. We're going to shout out these new patrons of ours, these people who have been so kind to essentially sponsor this show, give us the muns, so that we can keep giving you the buns. What buns means in this context, I'll let you decide.
I have no idea.
And we will start with Austin Steiner. Thank you, Austin Steiner.
Thank you, Austin. You are the best. And Susan Rolfe, I hope I said that right.
I think it's probably correct. Susan Rolfe, thanks, Susan.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, who could forget Robert? Just Robert. Yeah,
thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Just Robert. We love you, Robert.
Yes.
And also, Brian Farina.
Yeah, Brian Farina.
Or Farina.
Farina.
Thank you.
I don't know who that is. Mandy Walla.
Woo-hoo, or Walla. Mandy Walla.
Could even be Walla.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because exactly. It's W-A, like the capital W, lowercase a, capital L, lowercase a. It's almost like Washington and Louisiana. Mandy, Washington, Louisiana. Mandy Walla. Mandy Walla. I'm not sure, but it's great anyway. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Michelle Spurgeon.
Yeah, Spurgeon. Woo-hoo.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Erica Bianca. I hope I said that correctly. Bianca.
Thank you. Then we have Mallory Boone. Woohoo!
Yeah, descendant of Daniel. Thank you, Mallory. Sierra Beale.
Thank you, Sierra.
Thank you, Sierra. I'm guessing it's Beale. It might be Biel.
Probably Beale. It looks like Beale.
I'm guessing. I mean, it's spelled the same as Jessica Beale's last name, so who knows?
Yeah. Then we have Athena Hughes. Woohoo!
Whoa, what a combo of names.
I know, right?
Like, Hughes is like a really straightforward normal name, and then you have Athena. A goddess.
Yeah.
Thank you, Athena Hughes. Thank you. Then, Elias Esgdale. Esgdale.
You are a braver man than
I don't know. Is the G Elias silent? Esgdale. Is it Esdale?
Might
is it
be Esgdale.
Because it's ESG. Esgdale.
Yeah.
Esgdale. Could be Esgdale.
Help us out, Elias.
Esgdale. Esgdale.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's like Versailles, but Versailles has an S at the end of it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Let us know. Thank let us you. Know, Elias.
Kenji Shoemaker. Yeah. Woohoo!
Yay!
Woo, Kenji.
Thank you for Kenji Shoemaker.
Yeah.
And the Sandrian.
Oh, yes.
Or Sandrian.
We love the Sandrian.
Sandrian.
Yeah.
There's a number of ways to say that word, but no matter how we say it, they are the one of those.
Exactly. They are. They are the best, and we thank them. And Sam Lacaine.
Yes. Thank you, Sam Lacaine. And finally, last but certainly not least, Ethan Frank.
Thank you so much.
Ethan.
Thank you.
And thank all of you patrons, both new and old. We appreciate every single one of you. We are actually closing in on a very important milestone. We're trying to get to 250 patrons in total, I believe. And we're only 20 patrons away. Woo-hoo. And once we hit 250 patrons, I believe that's the merch level. Let me make sure of that, but basically something cool is going to happen, and I think it's merch.
I think it's merch. Yeah.
Woohoo! But we're only 20 people away. Come on, folks. Get us to that hump as quickly as possible. Get us to that hump by next month. Whatever month this comes in, get us there by next month. Who knows? Maybe we're already there, but it doesn't matter. We're done. This has gone on long enough. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Pip-pip patrons.
Pip-pip patrons.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.